Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. If you've taken time during quarantine to wrap yourself around a delicious novel or do the work of understanding the racial justice moment of 2020 through the written word, you'll be happy to know that today we're talking all about books. We're digging into some Michigan notable titles.
The story of King Strang, the Mormon king of Beaver Island. I think a lot of us who live in Michigan have heard this story. There's a couple of historical markers up on Charlevoix or on Beaver Island. And we know about it.
And we're going to hear about the challenges of publishing new work during a pandemic. First, though, we wanted to check in with a local independent bookseller to hear how these times are working out. Joining us today are Janet Webster-Jones, the owner and operator of Source Booksellers, and her daughter, Allison Jones-Turner. Allison, Janet, it's good to have you both.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Thanks for having us.
Could you tell me a little bit about what an average day at Source was like before the pandemic?
Well, none of our days are really average. We take the day as it comes. But prior to the pandemic, we concentrated on a relational business where we had customers come into the store, enjoy the books, have conversation, buy the books, have events here at the store with people coming in, doing some Skypes at that time, way back in the Skype days at that time, and having a business that focused on customers and people. Since the pandemic, we pivoted very quickly to online sales, and so it's changed the business a great deal. And we're reaching a large audience through our online sales and all of the supports and helps that we've had through the American Booksellers Association.
I know that the pivot to online retail was a big move for a lot of booksellers who had just been relying on their brick and mortar traffic for their business before that. How has it worked out for you?
Well, it was quite a shock to see that our sales plummeted from having sales to not having sales when we had to shutter our doors. But we were very lucky that our POS system has a online component and was able to sign us up quickly and have our inventory put online very easily. So we're happy about that. We had to teach ourselves about the shipping part, but that part was easy because of it, because of our POS.
Have your customers been willing to try buying online when in the past they would have really enjoyed just the ambiance of the store and coming in and talking to you?
Well, I think everybody has been forced to that because across the country and around the world, people are at home. And so that technical possibility is with everyone. And so I don't think that they had a choice necessarily if they wanted to purchase things or if they wanted to make contact with people. We're all using this format for online everythings now. So we joined in the chorus and pivoted to online sales. And we're using our desire to interact with people by talking with them on the phone and having a conversation with them sometimes through the chat. And having virtual author talks. So it's not so much of a choice, but it's an ability to change and move with the demands of the times.
And I think any of our customers that are really reluctant, they do give us a phone call. Mm-hmm. And we take their order and we complete their request the best we can.
That was going to be my next question, because one of my favorite things about the bookstore experience is going in and talking with booksellers, finding out who they're excited about reading, and, you know, maybe seeing some of the staff picks that have been flagged on the shelves. But it's good to hear that that aspect of it can survive even in the middle of a pandemic.
Well, actually, what happens is with us is that we have a new release Tuesday, which new releases come out from the publisher. And Allison is the one who really manages that a lot. And she puts up Instagram messages on about the new releases. And then we're always telling people what is out, what's in the store. We make special pictures on the computer about what has arrived or what we have that we're featuring. So some of that is still there. It's in a different form now. And we're not having great regrets about that at all, but it's an opportunity to change and serve our customers wherever they are and serve the community in a new and different way, but still serve them for the needs that they're requesting.
Allison, I have a question about that. Obviously, the holiday season is pretty big for booksellers, but traditionally there's something that happens in presidential election years where publishers kind of pull back a little bit, and they tend to not release a lot of new titles maybe after the summer reading season, because the assumption is that people will just be so tied up in news and current events that they might not have time for reading. What have you observed in the flow of new releases coming out of the publishing industry? Do you have a lot of books to talk to customers about?
I think that the pandemic changed the release of many books. And that's a different change for that. You're right. They do have a different schedule of releases. But in this particular case, holidays were coming up. And so we've had plenty of new releases to show that are in particular holiday catalogs or in publications that are saying these are good giftable reads, because shipping a book is an easy gift in a pandemic.
The other thing is that we have taken hold of this new way of doing things so that we do serve the people. Because we are a nonfiction niche, primarily nonfiction, we already had a lot of the books that got requested through the social cultural issues that happened, particularly after the murder of George Floyd, all the books about racism and the roots of racism in the country. So we were already having some of those books in the store. So at that point, we became quite advanced, I guess, in our offerings. The other thing is that people are still writing books and they're still being published in a lot of different ways, and different publishers, especially some of our small, independent, not too many books publishers, people have done very well at this time. For example, the book Braiding Sweetgrass is a Native American oriented book about life and the earth and so on. And it just took the publishers to a whole nother place. They didn't know they were going to have to print as many books, so they had to go through several new printings of that. So there are these positive things on either side. And I personally don't like to stay on the sad, oh, isn't it terrible that we can't side, because there's so much that we can do in new and different ways that we're doing things. So that's kind of where we stand.
Was there ever a moment when you worried that you might have to close the store?
I never thought we would close the store. We shuttered the doors, but because, as Allison said, we were able to get onto the online sales quite quickly and go from there. And yes, I was afraid that we wouldn't have money to pay our bills. But fortunately, we had grants that we were able to acquire that took care of us. And then we were able to do some selling in our new way. Every package that we sent out there at the beginning, we gave them a piece of chocolate and a tea bag along with their book. And we were so happy that people were buying like that. So I never considered closing the business, because if you close, it's hard to start again.
For sure.
And we've been in business, this is our 31st, well, almost 32nd year, I guess, of bookselling in Detroit. And so I never considered that, but I knew we were changing and doing things differently, not because we have to wait to change, but change was upon us and we had to go with what was being required of us.
Detroit is the kind of place where retailers tend to work together to build community. Where there is a commercial hub, you know, there are people who are trying to let others know that there's more than one reason to come and see. Will you tell us a little bit about your neighborhood and sort of what the vibe in the community has been this year?
Well, we live in Midtown Detroit. We live and work in Midtown Detroit. And Midtown is the space between all the major expressways that contains the heart of the city, which means that all the cultural and educational institutions are in this large area that we have our store in. And so there are many people that live in the area and have lived in the area for a long time. So we consider this our community. And they're not mall-oriented, so they're running to a mall, but rather having local businesses that supply needs. Now, of course, there have been ups and downs with that, but we do have people who are nearby and then people who come from places. And I guess because of some of the closings of the malls and the large bookstores, we've had people who come from some outlying areas because they want to come to a bookstore and they don't want to just buy, you know, from the the giant.
The behemoths, the online, the big online retailers. Tell me a little bit about what kind of books people tend to gravitate to. You mentioned, you know, the store's focus on nonfiction and how that's really been a blessing right now as people are looking for more reading that might speak to social justice and related subjects. But what are some of your most requested titles?
Well, early on, first of all, we decided that we would not chase the ideas or the desires of customers, but rather we would establish ourselves as a nonfiction, primarily nonfiction bookstore with five major categories of books that are highly curated in our store. So that's one set.
I think we've also responded to the book club books, like the Oprah Book Club that was reading Cast. So a lot of people wanted to read Cast, not just for the book club, but in general, once it was released, the book by Isabel Wilkerson, Reese Witherspoon's has a book club. And so those are some titles, sometimes even a fiction title, that move well with us because of the online energy around these book clubs and meeting together and reading books as groups in groups.
Yeah. After a short break, we'll continue my conversation with the owners and operators of Source Booksellers in Midtown Detroit, Janet Webster Jones and her daughter, Allison Jones Turner. We'll talk more about some popular picks for 2020. Stay with us. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Let's get back to my conversation now with Janet Webster Jones and her daughter, Allison Jones Turner. They're the owners and operators of Source Booksellers in Midtown Detroit. I know that sometimes as readers, we look to books for information, and sometimes we look to books for solace or an escape, and sometimes we're looking to books for hope, you know, a way out of troubles, and, you know, some signposts. Have you ever found yourself at loose ends, like trying, you know, saying to someone, I don't know if there's a book that's going to make us feel better about all the very difficult things that are happening right now? What are those conversations like?
Well, when you have a chance to talk with people, either by phone mostly now, or if they come in to pick up an order and they want to stick around a little bit and browse. We usually have two or three people at a time because we are a small store, so we don't have a lot of room for social distancing. We try to get to the nub of what they're seeking, and then we make suggestions about books. Sometimes they come in with an absolute knowledge of what it is they want, and we respond to that too. So no, we don't have a problem with trying to sell books to people, because believe me, our selections here are pretty good. And when people say, wow, I can't get out of here. I see this. So that has been going on for a long time. Now it's limited now because of the shutdown, the stay-at-home orders, and the pandemic. So people are learning about books in ways through their computers, through the radio, through their television, through stores, through their friends, and all of that. So they come in with their handhelds, or they call us and have a list. So we try to respond as much as we can to that. Now, what's happened since the pandemic is that our distributors have been very helpful in allowing us to do what's called ship to home. So if we don't have it in the store, we can call the distributor, and the warehouse would send it directly. So that has helped us a great deal as well. So what we're doing is we are adjusting the way of bookselling during this pandemic time, and we are trying to, as hard as we can, is to satisfy the wishes of people. If they send us a message on the online site that they want to be sent to grandma, and grandma is here, and to please put a note in there that says, hello, grandma, this is from so-and-so. So we try to satisfy all of those pieces and parts as well. And it's not a problem to do that.
That is full service. Did you experience any kind of bump in out-of-town customers, maybe for people who who, again, were looking for the kind of titles that you specialize in, but maybe also people growing in their awareness of the importance of supporting Black booksellers?
Absolutely. Yeah, we really did. And I think just the opening up of the world to people everywhere by way of the Zooms and the online sales and the radio and the television and all that, that's opened people up all over. I've received messages from people as far away as upstate Maine to the edge of Washington State from the Southwest. You know, people have heard about the store in some kind of way because we have been in business a long time. So I guess we've established a face that's not only just local, but somewhat to some degree across the country.
I wonder if you find yourself in a position of needing to, of being educators as well as being booksellers when people are coming to you and they want to support, they want to read, they want to, you know, white readers want to expand what they've been, you know, what they've been reading, but they're not exactly sure what they're going for.
Well, I think that's where it's a good practice to, that we give them a few options around their interests and maybe a book blurb or a little book talk about, you know, what this book is about to see if it matches their reading needs.
Yeah. It's a lot, as if you didn't have enough on your plate right now.
Well, it's really called book selling.
Yeah.
We just
that's
have
what
to
it
do
is.
It
we
virtual.
Are booksellers, and we're doing it differently. And, you know, book reading for many people slid into, I'm going to get away from the world and not do anything and curl it with a good book. Well, that's one way to read. That's not the only way to read. And reading is not just for that. So people are learning that there are more ways to acquire information. Either through a book, people have been reading on their handheld devices, and they're now learning that they're more comfortable with a book.
For sure.
And so they're coming back to books in a lot of ways.
For sure.
So we sit in a position where we sell books, and we sell them from our heart and from our minds and from our knowledge base. And interestingly enough, we're both teachers, or I was a teacher, and my daughter Allison still teaches. So that teacher energy is still running around with us.
For sure.
So we not only do we teach, but we also listen to what people have on their minds, what they're trying to find out about. You know, how a man called me the other day and asked for an English version of the Torah. What? So I went to work to try to find something for him, you know, because we have access to these warehouses. We have access to the computer. We have access to many ways of finding a book other than going to a book trade show or going to or just a catalog. So we try to utilize all of that. Possibilities for satisfying the needs and wants of the people who come to us with their requests.
Do you have any luck?
No, all the time. I mean, you mean for the Torah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I found a couple. Mm-hmm.
Do you have much time for reading yourselves these days?
Oh, we read all the time, but not. I don't read the whole book, but yeah. We read all the time, yeah.
Thank goodness for the audio book from Libro FM.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Right?
100%.
Yeah. So Libro FM is an independent bookseller's possibility for people to acquire an audio version of a book. And so we partner with them.
I can heartily endorse them. They're a great service.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got your own, you know, thoughts and curiosities and needs to attend to with your own book reading. Can I ask what kind of titles have been hitting with you lately?
We recently did some rereading of Black Bottom Saints. It's a novel by Alice Randall about Detroit's Black Bottom. And we initially did a launch with her for the book. And then we came back at the beginning of this month for a holiday edition to talk about the Saints of Winter. So we had to read it to have, you know, the information needed for the event,
the conversation. Also, we keep our eye on prize-winning books. The National Book Foundation just awarded the prize for nonfiction to the book called The Dead Are Arising, which is a new biography of Malcolm X. Very important book for Michigan. And mm-hmm. So, you know, we read parts of that. And our reading is not separate from the store. I mean, we're not curled up in a corner somewhere with a book, because it doesn't work like that anymore. It doesn't really work like that for most people. That
right.
Reading is maybe spotty and all the time, and whenever you can catch a few paragraphs.
Janet, I was curious about that book. Did you find information in there that, or perspective in there that you didn't know or that you hadn't seen before?
With the Malcolm X book?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, that's part of the 30-year journey that Les Paine did in the writing of the book. He talked to everybody who'd ever touched the life of Malcolm X. And so there's a lot that's there that nobody really knew. And so it was a book that was put together over a 30-year period. So that, of course, there would be plenty that I wouldn't have known, and other people wouldn't have known either.
Sure. Allison, how about you? What books have helped you out in this moment?
That's really hard. I read some of the Blacktop Wasteland, and that's a fiction book.
True crime.
Mm-hmm. And also another thriller of Lakewood, which is in a fictional town in Michigan, and it's about the medical healthcare by Megan Giddings. And so those are both fiction books, but they really were sort of an escape for me, but they also dealt with current situations that I needed to keep my eyes on.
Yeah. Lakewood is a really beautiful work of storytelling. It's a heavy theme, but it sort of speaks to what you were saying, that sometimes the escapist read is not really the one that's going to deliver for you in a year like 2020.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we have to ask the question, what are you escaping from? What is a person
exactly
escaping from, and where they need to go? So there are books that are fantasy, travel. There's a lovely book we have here called The
Lost Bells.
Lost Bells by McFarland, who wrote Underground, and just beautiful books of writing and of storytelling and of historical ecological knowledge. So I think that we have to be thoughtful about what are we talking about when people say they want to read and escape. Let's read and join in and become a part of the need to know.
Janet, Allison, what else have I neglected to ask you that you would like for people to hear about the shop or about yourselves right now?
Well, I think that you haven't neglected anything, I don't think. I just think that we are booksellers here in Detroit, and there are independent booksellers all over Michigan. We have a bag, there's a destination bag that has, I think, 12 or 15 bookstores in Michigan, mm-hmm. and that we're not the only ones in Detroit either. And we'd like for people to use their local independent stores for whatever their needs are, because that's what keeps the community strong. It keeps the community connected. For example, if I need some materials for the store, I can go over to our nearby hardware. Or if I need something for this, anything I need for the store, a person to build shelves, he's right here. So I think that people have to decide where they're going to put their money, because where they put their money is where their life will be.
Janet Webster-Jones is the author of Source Booksellers. We've been also speaking with her daughter, Allison Jones Turner. Ladies, keep safe. We wish you all the best for this holiday season and good things for 2021.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Devin Skillian is best known in Michigan as the nightly news anchor on WDIV in Detroit. He's known on a national level as the author of several children's books, including his first, Memoirs of a Goldfish. It's now part of a series of memoirs, including his latest this year, Memoirs of a Tortoise. We're picking up our conversation with Devin about his more seasonal contribution, Memoirs of an Elf. You use this book to unpack this small citizen of the North Pole and what he and the other elves do to make sure that Santa makes it around the world in one night. I guess it shouldn't come as a big surprise to us that the elves are really the brains of the operation and keeping Santa on task and on track all through the night. How did you come up with the story?
You know, I shouldn't even admit this, but my publisher said, you know, because we had done a couple of memoirs books by then. We had, after The Goldfish, came Memoirs of a Hamster and Memoirs of a Parrot. And I was already starting to work a little bit on Memoirs of a Tortoise. And they said, you know, a Christmas memoirs would be really great.
Of course.
It wasn't that I didn't want to do a holiday book. I really did. And when I think of sort of when people start asking for basically what feels like a sequel, some people see, ooh, Godfather 2. Well, I tend to see Police Academy 15. And it's just never a great idea.
Yeah.
Here I was like, well, I guess I could Memoirs of a Reindeer. And I started playing with that and I was just not getting anywhere. And all of a sudden when I put it into little Spark the Elf's hands, and I don't know what made me think about him being such a high tech, connected modern elf. But when I first hit on the idea of him snapping an elfie, I think all of a sudden the story sort of took off in my head a little bit. I thought, well, maybe we can do this. And ended up coming up with a story that kind of, because obviously these memoirs need a story somewhere in them as well. So it's one thing to say, how about a Christmas book? But it needs a story. And eventually Spark gave me one.
Have you by chance ever seen the movie Elf?
I have.
So you are aware that there is a character in the movie who is a children's book author named Miles Finch, who appears to be one of the grouchiest, most self-centered children's authors in the history of literature. I always wonder what children's book authors actually think of Miles Finch and the depiction in that film.
It's funny. I had forgot about that part of Elf. You're right. It's really interesting. I have long lamented the fact that I was never going to get to meet my children's writing hero, who was Shel Silverstein. He passed away before I could get a chance to make that happen. And but I've also been told that he was a tough cat to be around. So sometimes maybe it's a blessing, you know, when you don't meet your heroes necessarily. But it is a funny thing that most of the children's authors that I meet, and I have met many of them from, you know, at authors' conferences and workshops over the years, and they're mostly just a rather gleeful bunch.
Devin, I got to your new book, Memoirs of a Tortoise, after having read some lighter books that you've written, and I gradually realized that you were going for some very different ideas in this. Memoirs of a Tortoise is all about Oliver, who's an 80-year-old tortoise who has an 80-year-old pet, a human named Ike. And through the course of the story, one day Ike disappears, and Oliver comes to understand from the parade of family and friends visiting the house that Ike is not coming back. Why did you decide that you wanted to explore this particular topic?
I had read a story about an older couple that was trying to figure out their estate plan as they were getting older and how they were going to prepare for the care of their pet tortoise after they were gone. And this was not like an eccentric old person leaving $3 million to a cat. This was a very real problem because people are often outlived by their tortoises, which can also happen with parrots, by the way.
I've heard that.
And I was so fascinated by this conundrum. And when I started talking to my editor about the idea, she said, well, why don't you make it a memoirs book? And I said, because it's not one of these other books. These other books, April, as you've said, were sort of aimed at the funny bone and but when I put the story that I had been struggling with so much into kind of a memoir format, and instead of it being day by day by day with a tortoise, it's a slower story. So it's month by month by month. The story just sort of took shape with me that way, in a way that it hadn't before. I still wasn't sure that it was a great idea to release it as Memoirs of a Tortoise. My editor wanted me to have faith and a little more confidence in the people who have read the other memoirs books, that they would be open to this idea too. And I do think it's a kind of an important topic to explore with kids. Just, I was fascinated by this idea of flipping the child loses pet story on its head a little bit and exploring that idea of the pet being the one that is bereaved. And I'm pretty happy with the way it came out.
Devin Scillian is the nightly news anchor at WDIV in Detroit and the author of the popular memoirs series, including Memoirs of a Tortoise. Devin, thank you so much for this beautiful book and all the others, too.
April, it has been such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we'll talk with writer, educator, and avid reader Keith Taylor. If you've got some bookshop gift cards, he's got ideas. That's next. Stay with us. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Well, December 24th has arrived. We've had some snow. We have some reason to hope that the next 7 days will be somewhat quieter and more reflective than the past 358. So it's time to turn off your phone and get your read on. Keith Taylor drops in sometimes to talk books with us. He's retired from the University of Michigan, where he taught creative writing to undergrads and graduates. He's the former director of the Bear River Writers Conference, and he's also our favorite secret Canadian. Keith Taylor, welcome back to Stateside.
Right.
Maybe not so secret. I don't know.
No, I'm a proud Canadian. I just happen to have lived in Michigan for 50 years.
Right. May I just say, first of all, I'm absolutely mortified. We just got so tangled up in the incredible mess that is 2020 hard news that I don't think you and I have spoken since last December. I'm really sorry about that.
It's all right, April. It's been a long time. I think I did a couple of short little essays in there early in the year, but it's partly my fault too. I just got all distracted.
And I think a lot of people are sort of feeling that this year, that they've gotten out of touch with people that they wanted to talk to. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
You know, I kind of didn't read the first 6 months of the year. Like, I was just kind of in a state of constant watchfulness, I think. And it was very frustrating. Yeah. I read some comic books, but I really kind of lost my books. And it wasn't till the second half of the year that I remembered, yeah, you got to bring some intention to this and get back to it.
Yeah, I kept reading, but I didn't do, it was very difficult for me to do book reviews. And I have, you know, I have several options for doing those. And I just really flaked out for 4 or 5 months. But I just stopped. I just sat in my chair in the study and looked out the window and went on to the next book.
Well, there's worse ways to cope with the crazy that is.
It's true.
The craziness that is 2020. Can you, we know you brought some book recommendations for us. Can you recommend a story that maybe doesn't so much take us out of the craziness of the present moment as perhaps it might offer us a different lens on crazy?
So yeah, there was this very interesting popular history this year called The King of Confidence by Miles Harvey. What it is the story of King Strang, the Mormon king of Beaver Island. I think a lot of us who live in Michigan have heard this story. There's a couple of historical markers up on Charlevoix or on Beaver Island. And we know about it. You know, we know it's there, 30 miles off the coast of Charlevoix in the middle of Lake Michigan, this happened. And the story that kind of makes us smile, and that's often enough.
Well, I feel like the smile is probably going to fall off of people's faces when they get into this a bit. Can you explain who James Strang was and how he came to Beaver Island?
Absolutely. James Strang was, right at the time after Joseph Smith, the founder and first prophet of Mormonism, was assassinated by a mob in Illinois. Brigham Young had not quite taken over the Mormon church yet, although they'd begun the sort of slow movement out to Utah. James Jesse Strang, another Mormon, not nearly as well-placed as Brigham Young, but perhaps a lot more of a con man, took another smaller group and brought them to Beaver Island in Lake Michigan, where very quickly he named, and they didn't pay for any of the land, they just took it. They took it from the native people, they took it from the few white settlers who'd first gotten there, and they took over the whole island in a matter of a year or so. He named himself King. He ran for the Michigan legislature, and since everybody on Beaver Island voted for him, he got it. He sent people out all over the upper Midwest and out to New York and things to recruit people to his group, his cult, and went on. They committed crimes. They stole horses. They were famous horse thieves. They protected each other. They would break each other out of jail if they were ever caught. They'd go to Ohio to break each other out of jail. So he was an interesting character, certainly charismatic, probably in his own way a kind of perverse genius, but crazy, absolutely crazy. I mean, he was just, you know, imagined himself king of the world.
What kind of explanation does Miles Harvey offer readers about how somebody so unhinged kept such a tight hold on his followers?
Harvey makes the point that this is who we are. This we're talking mid-19th century here, before the Civil War, the rise of sort of capitalism, the rise of entrepreneurship. Americans just love this sense that there was somebody out there going to take over and do things, and they were more than willing to follow him. Harvey has a real 19th century subtitle on his book. So it's called The King of Confidence, but the subtitle, which goes on a while, is A Tale of Utopian Dreamers, Frontier Schemers, True Believers, False Prophets, and the Murder of an American Monarch. That's all part of what Harvey talks about and what Strang was. Now, is there any explanation for the con man? You know, I don't know. Do we all look for someone in whom we can place our confidence? Maybe that's a human trait, not just an American trait, but you know, that seems to be there. Oh, if I can trust this person with my money, my liberty. In Strang's case, with my family and my wife and, you know, all of those things.
Keith, there's something on your list that feels like it might be a sort of a beach read, a novel by Natalie Bacopoulos called Scorpion Fish. Could you tell us about it?
Yeah, Scorpion Fish is interesting. It's Natalie Bacopoulos. She's a Michigan writer, but she's, you can tell by her name, that she's Greek. And she's fascinated by Greece. And this is, Scorpion Fish is a love story. It takes place in Greece, but you can tell from the title that it's probably a love story with that has some sting in it that might be a little hard to hold on to. And that's certainly the case with this one. This is, it takes place in Greece. Bacopoulos' first novel also took place in Greece, although she teaches at Wayne State, so, you know, she's around, although I think she gets to Greece as much as she can, not this year.
Right.
When she can. The first novel took place during the junta, the lake called the Green Shore, during the late 60s, early 70s. This one takes place essentially now, after all that famous austerity program that the rest of Europe imposed on Greece and the refugees from the Near East filling the islands and filling Athens and changing the whole makeup of the place. She's got a character in here, a woman named Mira, who is returning to Greece after her parents, who had immigrated to the States, died. And that's interesting, too, before I get too far, that difference between immigration and refugee. That's a part of this novel, and it's hidden. She doesn't beat that drum too much, but that's an important part of this novel. What does that difference mean? What is the people who are in those positions, what does that mean for them, the difference between immigrant and refugee? Mira goes back to Athens. Her next-door neighbor in her apartment building is a man simply referred to as the captain. They talk on their porches. Now, if you've never been to Athens, every apartment has a porch, but the porches are all divided by walls. So you're out there with your neighbor, but you can't see him. You can talk around the wall, but you can't talk through it. And thus begins this very odd love story. It's told in two voices, Mira's voice and the captain's voice. And they go through all their, you know, their ambivalences. They, of course, you know, Greece is a small country. It's there's a lot. They have people in common, and they discover that, and they realize the importance of that. So they go through. They work out all these things. All these questions are circle around this subdued love story. What's going on in Europe? How do we deal with this historical moment? What does this austerity mean? How does it change us? So it's a very rich and textured love story, although the love story is still there and is still probably the through line, which is pretty interesting. And as you might expect, you know, every now and then she'll just stop and give some really gorgeous descriptions of Greece. And we like that.
Yeah, especially now like when that. No one's going anywhere.
Exactly. Wouldn't it be nice to go to Greece now and see those islands? Yeah.
Keith, would it be asking for a spoiler to ask you if they ever end up actually seeing each other, if they sort of escape the geometry of their porches?
They do end up seeing each other. Yes, it's true. And they do a really beautiful novel. And the fact that she doesn't beat anything, even the love, that she doesn't sort of pound you over the head with any of that makes it a really provocative read, I think.
If you're just joining us, we're talking today with writer and educator Keith Taylor about some of his favorite books of 2020. I know you always have an interesting new book of poetry in your back pocket.
I do. This one's fun. Alison Swan did the first full-length collection. She's done some short collections, some chapter books before, but this was in that Wayne State series. It's called A Fine Canopy. Alison... probably the largest reputation she's had in the state is as an environmentalist. She and her husband David won the Petoskey Award for Michigan Environmentalist of the Year back in 2002 for the work they did protecting the Saugatuck Dunes State Park. And, you know, I mean, that's all-consuming, thankless work. We are always under attack by highly paid people, you know, working for special interests, and they did all that, and they succeeded. You know, I think they succeeded. They worried that things are still never going to be right, but you know, they saved the place. Mm-hmm. But during all of that, she kept working as a poet, really, really interesting poet, and a nature poet, or, you know, an eco poet, whatever you want to call it. Although Alison Swan said a nice thing. She said, oh, eco-poetry, that's just the cool kid's name for nature poetry, which I thought was kind of good. I'm going to use that. There are poems in this book that talk about the dunes in Michigan, of course. She's got family history in the UP, so they go to the UP. She teaches at Western, but she lives in Ann Arbor, so there are poems about southeastern Michigan. So the poems go all, they're very much here. They're very thoughtful. She's got a long sequence of historical poems from the archives in 19th century voices. But I have one poem that I picked out from the middle of the book, April, if you'll let me read
Please
it.
Please do.
Which is very typical of what she does. This is called Outside. Snowplows pass on the road. She can feel them in her bones, like the vibration of the furnace. A ship's engine in the ship of her house, chugging through swells so far out to the sea, there are goddesses and nothing whatsoever to fear from the dark. So the house turns into the sea, and out there on the sea, we have nothing to fear. Just, I mean, and all that happening in less than 10 lines. So it is pretty. Yeah.
Keith, speaking of, you published your own new poetry chapbook titled Let Them Be Left, and it's about your time on Isle Royale. Could you say a few words about why you went out there? And then maybe we've got time to read a bit.
Oh, okay, great. In 2019, I was asked back to be a returning artist in residence. I've always gone to the wilderness because I've been inspired there. I don't think I'm particularly unique in that. Isle Royale is a particularly special place, and I'm not the only one who, I mean, I don't get all strange about sacred landscapes and things like that, April, but Isle Royale feels to me like a very sacred space. It's an interesting geology. The animals that are there are interesting and have interesting patterns, which are studied pretty significantly by wildlife biologists. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's surrounded by Lake Superior, the largest body of fresh water in the world. This was my second extended stay. This was the summer of 2019. And I had the same thing that happened to me almost 30 years earlier when I had the same appointment, that the work just came to me and everything seemed to want to make itself into a poem. Let me read you this little poem. It's one of the things I would see regularly when I was out on the point where the little cabin was, where they put me. It's called Scoville Point. But there were shed moose antlers. There are a lot of moose on Isle Royale. Easiest place in Michigan to see moose, by the way. They're all over the place. And there were shed antlers. And I looked at those antlers, and they looked like bones. And usually when you find bones in the woods, you think, you know, it's an easy death reference, you know, the mortality and things. But when you look at antlers, they're shed because babies were made, you know. This was a mating ritual. And suddenly everything's different. So this poem came out of that. Moose antlers. Glisten like bone, hold the sun, the brightest objects on Scoville Point, nestled in a bowl of basalt and blueberries, bone shed after rituals of mating, 11 tines aside, the first polished and sharpened to stab and dominate, the bone-white palms rivered with lines of veins that once held the velvet, not a memory of death this time, but bone shed celebrating in bone brightness the spring-born calf, the generations of moose.
I don't think I'm ever going to look at antlers the same way again.
Good. That's always the
That's hope. Amazing. Do you feel like you found some different things at Isle Royale this time than you did on the other trips?
Well, yeah, certainly, because I was in much, I mean, you know, I'm within spitting distance of 70 now. So, and I'm not, you know, I'm a guy who sits around and reads a lot of books, so I'm not in the best of shape. And I certainly felt it in the body. So I had to approach the whole thing more slowly, more cautiously. I had to watch where I walked. I used hiking sticks. It was a very different experience because of my body in that space, but still doable, a little more tiring. So every part of my encounter with Isle Royale in 2019 was slow and cautious. And that changed my attitude. It made me nervous. It didn't really frighten me, but it made me nervous the first few days. And then I kind of got into it. It was like, oh, okay. I can sit on this rock for 2 hours. I don't have to go anywhere. This rock is enough, you know. And that was really interesting. It makes me think if I go back when I'm 80, how I'm going to respond.
For sure. Well, Keith, is there anything that's on your mind as we go to close out the year? Other than the fact that I'm sure you share hopes that a lot of the rest of us have that we can just close the door on it and maybe move on to better things.
Yeah. Well, you know, people, I told someone else a couple of weeks ago, what do you miss the most? And oddly enough, April, I think I miss the most going to poetry readings. And I thought I was sick of poetry readings. I've been to thousands of them over the years. And I go to these things and I miss it. You sit with 5 or 15 other people, maybe 50 or 500 if it's somebody famous in some big auditorium. And you sit there and you listen to a poor, fragile human being say words that they've spent a long time thinking about. And you all sit there together, and sometimes it's silly, and sometimes it's stupid, and sometimes it's just deeply meaningful, and I just find that I miss it all.
Well, Keith, yeah. Please do take care, and let us know when something gets scheduled that you think we should know about.
Great, I will. Thank you, April.
Keith Taylor, writer, educator, and our very own literary buddy here on Stateside. And that's Stateside for today. Our show is produced by Mike Blank, April Van Buren, and by our director, Mercedes Mejia. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Stateside's a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm April Baer. Thank you so much for listening. We wish you the best of holidays. We'll see you tomorrow.